This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 742, brought to you by the new Audible original, The Sandman, and iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, doing the thing.
Or mannequin.
Secret, I've got a secret.
With parts made in Japan.
You don't know that we did that live. And I was not prepared. That really came for me. Thank you, Styx. Welcome, hello, to the pick of the... I was like, oh no, I can't take other shots at this, but welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 742. I'm Josh Flanagan. This is my co-host, Garner Kilpatrick.
Anything different freaks us out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You do and one you thing the same way for 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go changing it up. It's all fucked up.
Well, people, did we do this on the air before? Or were we talking about how relatively recently, we're like, you know, I started doing the show notes while I edited. And you were like, me too. Why do we not do that?
That was stupidly long to figure out.
It's been like 13, 14 years.
Yeah, it was like 13 years. Like, why don't I do the show notes while I'm editing as opposed to after spending another 2 hours afterwards?
I am Josh Flanagan. This is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi,
not
everyone.
The swiftest.
We're dumb.
Not the sharpest hammer in the toolbox. We are iFanboy. Every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks the one they like the best, and we call that the pick of the week. We are going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about from any other book that we had something enlightening to say about, we will talk about. And then there's listener mail if possible. There's a patron pick.
Yep.
There should be powers, which I just remembered as a thing I needed to think about.
Yep.
And it should be a good time. We will talk about what happens in the book. So if you haven't read them, you could be spoiled. That's your warning. Connor, you had the pick. And look, it's a DC anthology.
I read my books Wednesday and finished reading, and there wasn't like a jumps out in front of you, kicks you in the balls pick. There's a lot of books I really liked, but... Like, there's a lot of books I like, oh, I like this book a lot, but there was like four or five books I really liked a lot that just, but, ..
I had one very clear. I was like, oh, that's the pick. We'll get to it.
I'm curious. So then I slept on it, and I woke up the next morning, and I found myself thinking about a handful of the stories from this DC Cybernetic Summer number one, 80-page giant, that DC's been doing these anthologies a lot lately. And they get interesting people to work on them. And now I'm not going to say this entire issue was great. It wasn't. But there were three really terrific stories in here amongst a handful of good ones. And a couple of ones that weren't that great. But there was three really terrific ones. And I found myself the next day not thinking about other full issues, but thinking about these three short stories. So I thought, well, there you go. Did you read this or is it all me?
They've been doing for, you know, like spring, winter, yep. Christmas, holiday, Valentine's Day, Halloween. And I generally don't really like them. Mm-hmm. However, I really like the idea of them, and I really like that they're being done.
Yeah.
Short stories are a great way to use comics. I'm just not super interested in them.
So it's not going to be a super long discussion. First off, right out of the gate, your first story is Batman in Limits of Control, written by Karina Becko and Gabriel Hardman, drawn by Gabriel Hardman. And so this is, again, DC Cybernetic Summer. So each one of these stories has to do with robots or technology or cyborgs or the Metal Men. There's always some robotic element to the story. So in this short story, and it's a short story, so you get right into the action. You don't get a lot of backstory. Batman is in space in one of his spaceships, and he is... Something weird is going on with the satellites up there. The space stations are all sort of combining into one entity. And he boards the ship and realizes it's Brother Eye, his old creation. And this is definitely old continuity Batman. Brother Eye's old creation is sort of assimilating all of these satellites and spaceships.
Brother Eye was a fourth world thing for some reason.
Right, but this, if you crawl, Batman and Brother Eye were together in the pre-52. That was that whole Checkmate story. And
Yeah.
This is Gabriel Hardman getting to do space sci-fi with Batman, a character he really draws very well. And also, there's a really great comedic beat in this piece. Batman's in his giant space suit, and he's fighting off the drones in the space station, and he's trying to shut Brother Eye down, but he doesn't have... He can't access the program to do so. He gets ejected from the suit. He can't shut down the thing anymore. And he's like, there's one other person who can do this, who can save the day. And we cut to... Alfred on vacation. So he's no help. He was the one who could have done it from the Batcave, but we see him swimming with the giant turtles. He's got a snorkel gear on. It's this great smash cut to Batman's building him up to Alfred can save the day. We cut to literally Alfred snorkeling.
I mean, he deserves that.
He totally deserves it.
Yeah.
And there's a lady calling his name. His phone's ringing. There's a message saying, initiate mecha suit auto-destruct. But he's snorkeling.
Yeah.
Dude doesn't see his phone. There's a Mai Tai, and there's a woman in a bikini, and there's a giant turtle. He's got other things to do. So Batman has to figure out how to save the day. But there's just great action from Gabriel Hardman. He's the master of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was a little funny. It was a little exciting. It's only, it's 5 or 6 pages or however long it is. That was a really, really good one. And then I think I'm going to lead up to the last one I like the most. So then there's a really fun Booster Gold and Blue Beetle story, The Boys of Summer, written by Heath Corson, someone I don't know. Art by Scott Koblish, who we've liked a lot in the past. He used to draw that book that you always talked about.
Yeah, it was I don't remember what it is.
Was those Deadpool issues? Those random Deadpool
issues?
Maybe
it was. Yeah. Like they'd have like in the middle sort of connectors. Yeah.
Like before that, there was like a Nicola Scott, Wonder Woman, and Platinum from Metal Men story. That was fun. There was a David LaFuente drawn Josh Williamson Flash story, which looked great, but David LaFuente's art doesn't really help the new costume design. All these random sort of interesting pairings. But then the Booster Gold Blue Beetle story was a really fun time travel story in which, again, pre-continuity, best buddies Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are going to the beach, but the beach is too crowded. So they get in Booster's time bubble to go back in time to a less crowded day, which leads to this sort of cascading time travel event in which Blue Beetles and Booster Golds keep showing up at this beach at the same time, but from the different times in their lives. So you get like middle age, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold in really bad haircuts and facial hair, and then you get like older men. Blue Beetle keeps getting progressively fatter as he shows up, and then we get like elderly versions. And it was just really funny sort of stacking story in which there'd be a buzz and then another bubble would show up, and then you'd get like really Booster Gold looking like a professional wrestler and Blue Beetle with the gut, and then modern Blue Beetle tosses the chips away in fear. Like it got funnier and funnier as it goes along, and then
sounds real good.
It was funny. And then King Shark shows up with a treasure box and they all sort of party on the beach. It was a fun, funny story. The technology there would be the time travel element of it.
Nice.
But the one that sort of blew me away that I wasn't expecting at all. I wasn't expecting anything at all. But the one that blew me away was Robot Man in Summer Bummer, written by Max Bemis, who did that Moon Knight run we really liked, drawn by Greg Smallwood. And I almost sent you pages from this, Josh, to make sure you read it. But this was...
Oh, Greg Smallwood.
This was incredibly good. This was sort of Robot Man's ennui as he tries to hang out with his old buddies who are not robots and not superheroes. And... their lifestyle doesn't really mesh with his lifestyle. And it's just all these really funny beats. It's almost like a vignette. They're at a club. He's not having fun. Some girl asks if he has Wi-Fi because the signal in here sucks. And then the gears switch up and they go hang out with the Metal Men and Cyborg and Red Tornado and live his life with his buddy. And at one point, they're all super high, but like robot high, not like human high. And
because they're sucking down something, and like Cyborg and Red Tornado and Cliff are all plugged into this machine. It's like three guys around a giant bong. We're basically talking upgrades and God, if God exists. And it made me laugh. It was fucking gorgeous. Greg Smallwood is incredibly
he's
good.
One of those people that if I see his name, if I don't read it, I look at it. Like, he's that good.
And then the end of the story, going to the comic shop, and it says, a summer without comics ain't no summer at all. Three great short stories, and there's a couple of good ones in there.
Who's the cover? Is that a cover by Dan Mora and Tamara Bonvillain?
He did the Klaus books, and
yep,
it's a great cover, and those three stories really, like, the next day I was thinking about all three of them.
Tell you something, Red Tornado with a bunch of camping shit strapped to his back is pretty great.
That was a good one, too. Red Tornado in summer camp with his family, Stephanie Phillips and Layla DeLuca, Jordy Belair. Mm-hmm. His family's going camping, and they keep trying to get him to pay attention, but the Justice League keeps signaling him, and there's crises. And it's, you know, the Santa superhero story, but it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun issue. These anthologies aren't always 100% great, but I can't remember the last time I was like, wow, that was really a really good short story, and there was three of them.
I love that.
Yeah, but you should definitely read that Max Bemis, Greg Smallwood one.
Will do.
If only for the art. It's Max Bemis is really good, too. He needs to do some more stuff. This was a good one. This was one of the better ones.
Awesome.
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, there were other really good books. I really liked Amazing Spider-Man 45, Nick Spencer, with the first appearance by Mark Bagley in this run with Spencer, I believe.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, we're doing this. All right. But it wasn't bad. It was pretty good Bagley.
It was good Bagley. Say what you will, it feels comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to mention the cover.
Yeah.
Which I really liked a lot.
So, the only bit about this was that there was the Sin Eater special issue before, which I kept going, is this a regular Amazing Spider-Man issue? And it may have been.
Yep.
But I think it actually took place after this one.
I don't know.
Because it came up from out of nowhere, because you had Spider-Man in the back of Overdrive's car. And I was like, where the hell did this come from? And I just sort of went with it. And then this one, we saw why he showed up. And I was like, that's a weird choice, publishing-wise. You know, I got through it. I'm fine. Like, I thought it was pretty good. But I was really looking forward to this a lot of times. And the one part about this run that I don't love is the menacing.
Yeah.
That's the least interesting part about this whole thing, which, you know,
that bug creature has been there the whole time in the background.
I know. And I like, the more I learn, the less interested I am.
Sure.
So... But it's kind of also getting a little serious and less fun, and I don't like that as much.
Well, so first of all, I remember reading those Sin Eater comics in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't, so that also would make a difference.
Who killed Gene DeWolf, black-suited Spider-Man. It was fun to see the flashbacks to black-suited Spider-Man. It had some impact on me. The thing is, like, I don't remember as a kid being that blown away by Sin Eater, but I remember reading the stories. You know, Gene DeWolf was a major character in the book for Spider-Man, so her being killed was a big deal at the time. I don't know. Like, I liked this, but it felt like kind of a weird overview. Like, it felt like we weren't almost in the story yet. It's almost like, because the first half of the, not half, but the first part of the book is like almost setting up the status quo again. Like, Peter's, you know, moping around because MJ's hasn't come back from LA. And so there's a lot of pages of him sort of recapping where he's been emotionally, which I get if they're trying to make this like a jumping on point. But for me, it felt like it didn't really get into the story until we got to page like 12. And that's a lot of real estate in a 20-page comic.
Yeah.
Also, like, I don't think you can get tickets to Shakespeare in the Park. I think you just go.
You know what's funny is that I just read, because I've been reading the Robert Moses book, the book about Robert, The Power Broker by Robert Caro, and there was this long portion about Shakespeare in the Park and why it was like really successful and then got fucked up completely, and then this showed up immediately.
Oh, it's still, I mean, when I lived in New York,
Well, he almost killed it out of pride.
Oh, sure.
He actually liked it.
It's just free, and I think you just go, and it's like first come, first serve if you can get in. I don't think you can order tickets for it.
Yeah, I don't
know. I grew up there. I grew up like four blocks from the theater.
Did you do it?
Yeah.
You never did it? Oh, okay, yeah.
I saw The Seagull with Kevin Klein and Meryl Streep and Natalie Portman.
Were you old enough to appreciate
that?
Yeah,
I was out of college. I was in my 20s.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really awesome.
I mean, I liked it. I just, this issue, not, the sequel was also good, but I like this issue. It just felt like we were in a lot of setup mode. And also, like you, I don't really care about the bug creature. Hopefully that it ends up being interesting.
It's a little bit of an also-ran. It reminds me, or Scourge.
Yeah.
Like Scourge is the other one that's just like that. And then they were tying, I just felt like it was referencing a lot of things that I don't know. Mm-hmm. So there was the girlfriend who was in the earlier
Carly Cooper, yeah.
Carly Cooper, and then like her dad was a shit, but then there's this other guy who was the Sin Eater, and then he was a shit, and I was like, wait, who is it? And I like that Overdrive character. Mm-hmm. And then, spoiler, and 3, 2, they killed him, presumably. I get maybe not. Was there a thing at the end? You know.
Yeah, he came back alive at the end.
Okay, that's fine.
On the morgue table.
I like that character, and Nick Spencer created him over in the Superior Foes of Spider-Man, I think. So more of that guy would be good.
He's back alive.
Yeah.
He popped up. His wound disappeared, and he popped up alive.
Yeah.
What happened to me? I enjoyed reading it. I liked the I thought it was good Bagley. I'm hoping the story now ramps up. That's mm-hmm. all.
Yeah, I think so.
Peter was mopey.
It was setty uppy. It wasn't bad, but I didn't have fun with it like I did the other ones.
Wonder Woman 759 is the first issue of the new creative team, so I gave it a shot. Mariko mm-hmm. Tamaki, Michael Janin, formerly of Batman, and Jordi Belair in colors. Great colors. Again, I liked it, but it was like the first, and I totally get it. This is like a big new issue. They're hoping Mariko Tamaki's fans come on, Michael Janin's fans come on. So the first quarter was sort of set up. You know, mm-hmm. who is Wonder Woman? Who does she fight? What does she do? And so I was like, okay, well, I know all this, so let's get going. It was fun. She moves into a new apartment. She's got a precocious young neighbor who has a bunny pet, and they go to the store to buy furniture because Wonder Woman has no furniture, and she prevents a grisly death when a woman is possessed in her SUV full of kids to drive a car into a truck. She saves the day, and we find out that someone is possessing people, and turns out it's Max Lord. Now, let me say this. This is clearly the movie influence. Maxwell Lord has never been called Max Lord, to my knowledge, in the comic books. He's been called Maxwell or Maxi by Booster mm-hmm. Gold or Blue Beetle. No one's ever called him Max Lord. Now, I assume the movie people thought Maxwell was too dumb and are calling that character who is in the next Wonder Woman movie, should it ever come out, Max Lord. Mm-hmm. And so now in the comics, suddenly he is Max Lord. And I was like, oh, fuck that.
I don't know if it's the case of the Joker thing, but, you know, I feel like Maxwell Lord is, you know, the thing.
He is Wonder Woman's Joker.
Yeah.
Like, if you take away the Greek god characters, mm-hmm. of the non-god characters, you know, there's Cheetah, who was sort of like her perennial, yeah. you know, opposite, Nemesis. Who was also in the film. And then Maxwell Lord, they've built up ever since. She killed him way back
right.
in whatever story that was. It just bugged me that they call him Max Lord, and I get it. No one cares but me, but I, you know.
No.
I read Maxwell Lord for the first time in 1980, you know, or whatever that was when I read the first Justice League book with Keith Giffen, you know, when he was first introduced. That was, so he's been around my 35 years for me. Mm-hmm. Sure. So when they suddenly start calling him Max, I'm like, oh, fuck all of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it looked really good. The Michael Janin art was good, and the story was intriguing. I liked it. Again, but ...
Mariko Tamaki did, first thing I recognized was Skim from 2008,
mm-hmm.
did some Tomb Raider books, did X-23, did Supergirl, so there's and did some She-Hulk for a bit. She-Hulk's always good. Boy, you read a lot of books I didn't read.
X-Factor number one, Leah Williams writing David Baldion on art. I like X-Factor, always liked X-Factor.
Wait, X-Factor 1?
Yeah.
What the hell?
I don't know.
Did they not have an X-Factor in the Hickman relaunch of everything?
No, this is the X-Factor relaunch.
No shit.
I picked this up because of the concept, which is, you know, the whole idea with the X-Men, and we're going to get to that more in depth in the next book discussion, is that they're on Krakoa. There's all these backups of the X-Men. So if you die, they can reboot you from that backup. And so this idea is, who's investigating the murders and the disappearances? That's X-Factor. So X-Factor's whole thing is, before the group of five who does a resurrection will resurrect somebody, they need to A, confirm the person's dead, and B, they want to know how it happened. And so X-Factor is like, we'll figure that out. Because the issue starts off with Aurora going missing and believed to be dead. And so her brother, Northstar, gathers up a ragtag team to go investigate her disappearance. And they find her dead. And she's going to get resurrected. So at the end of it, they're like, well, that's going to be our job. We're going to go out. And because they're resurrecting mutants all the time. So there's tons of mutants and some of them go missing. Some of them die. So someone has to be in charge of investigating those disappearances and those murders. So that's what they're going to do. Now, I love the concept. The art was okay. It wasn't great. I just don't love this particular grouping. It's not your traditional X-Factor other than Polaris is on the team. Northstar is the leader of it. And he's kind of a dick. the problem is there's a whole bunch of New Mutants that I just don't know who they are and what they can do. And they don't really do a good job of explaining it in this issue until like three quarters of the way through. So like three quarters of the story, I'm reading these characters. I don't know their names. I don't know what their powers are. And it isn't until later on when they sort of officially form a team where they sort of get in depth on their abilities. And so that was kind of a bummer. But I liked it. It was fun.
Leah Williams wrote that Mary Jane series where she went to Hollywood that you kind of liked.
Mm-hmm.
Did you keep reading that?
Yeah, I read it. I don't know if it's over or not, but I've read it.
Right.
Who knows? But I enjoyed this issue. I didn't, again, I didn't love the lineup. I didn't love the art, but I did enjoy the story.
Now, I find it interesting that I bailed on X-Men, as I knew I would, and I haven't heard otherwise. So, you're still going? Are you still reading, obviously the main title, X-Men?
I read X-Men and Marauders, that's it.
Okay.
And now X-Factor.
And there's 17 others?
There's a lot of others.
Okay.
X-Men number 10, this is the Empire crossover, Hickman and Lenilla Francis Yu. So we've been talking about two things on the show about the X-Men. Number one, they're assholes, mm-hmm. and they're near villains in the Marvel Universe. And number two, they like to fuck.
Well, yeah.
This issue's all about the second part.
Huh.
And again, this could have been my pick of the week, except it's mainly about three characters, and I don't know who the hell two of them are.
Mm-hmm.
Vulcan, who is, I guess, he's the third Summers brother, wakes up, and no one's home at the Summers house on the moon. Again, we know from reading Empire, the moon is where the formerly French hippie army is based, so that's where they're going to cross over.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one in the summer house but these two women, who I don't know. They identify them in the beginning, in the little rundown of who the characters are, but I don't know who they are. And they're getting drunk on. They're going to make margaritas and get drunk, and they basically want to bang Vulcan. And the whole issue is about whether or not they're going to bang.
Mm-hmm.
And who they're going to invite to their party, their banging party.
So there's very loose social codes on Krakoa.
Yeah. So at one point, you know, the girls are drinking margaritas, and Vulcan's got one, but he's not really enthusiastic. And they say, are we drinking or are we drinking? Because frankly, I wouldn't mind turning things up to 10. I say 11 because there's a lot of very hot, medium-powered mutants on the island that would love to get down to the summer house. The summer house is a fuck house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're basically just saying it. Either way, are we partying or are we partying? It's like, wow.
So
that was the cold open, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's going for it.
And then the main story is Vulcan goes out for a walk to get away from the the girls who really want to bang and runs into the whatever the fuck they are called. The Chitauri. Not Chitauri. Kotaki. Is that it?
Kotati.
He runs into them and they have a big fight on the moon. The art was good and the story was fun. I just wish I knew anything about these two girls who really want to bang Vulcan. We've been saying that Krakoa was like a big spring break party, but this particular house, the summer house, where in which the thruple of Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Wolverine with their connecting rooms live, seems to be the sex house.
Uh-huh.
And that's where people go.
Let me ask you this as we back up a little bit, because I've walked away. First of all, do you have any idea how long this is supposed to go?
Which?
Just like
Hickman's thing or Empire?
The Hickman arc.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something you knew.
No.
Are you seeing any sort of clues about sort of... I mean, I assume he's got one story in mind that has an overall arc. Do you think you have an idea where it's going?
No. And I think it's relatively early, and I said that very slowly because I have no concept of time anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, issue 10.
Yeah, and this book's monthly, so it's been about a year.
Like, I feel... And this is just from reading those characters in other books where they show up, is I really feel like their hubris is starting to be a problem. I just don't know. Like, what I'm wondering, is the story going to be that they're going to have a comeuppance?
Well, I think it has to be. There's got to be a schism. We've already seen that in other issues of other comics. I've been reading the one-shots. The Magneto one a few weeks ago featured, Magneto building a separate dwelling in another part of the world for Emma. Like, they're already starting to splinter a little bit. Black King's been doing his own machinations. He's the one that killed Kitty Pryde. The moment in the beginning, Kumbaya moment, we have Krakoa, we're all going to live in peace and orgies together, has sort of fallen apart a little bit already. I don't know where he's going with it, but clearly we're sort of in the second act of things starting to split.
It's interesting because that seems like the most obvious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, good storyteller is probably not going to do the most obvious thing, but you never know. And it starts, with, we're the future, Charles, not we're the future, not them.
Right.
Basically, which is the whole thing. And they kind of swing their big dicks around and this is how it is. And everybody goes, okay. And that doesn't necessarily make them look good. It makes them look like ballers, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
Literally and figuratively.
Right, yeah, yeah. You're not wrong.
And then, like, so then the next step would be, like, they're falling apart, and how do they fix it? But then they can't become pariahs, so it must be that, like, we've got to do this, but we have to do this in a better way. That's the only thing I could think of.
Well, we'll see. Who knows? I mean, everyone is rehabilitatable. You know,
yeah.
We rehabilitated Tony Stark and Reed Richards after Civil War, so
mm-hmm.
anything's possible. I am enjoying it for the most part. I mean, I'm not reading all the books, but I am really liking this particular bizarre, and it's bizarre, take on the X-Men.
Yeah, I'd say that's the strength of it so yeah. far, but eventually that...
It has to go somewhere, and I think it will.
Yeah.
Hickman does long-form storytelling. He tells these epic tales that they don't always work, but he has a story in mind. He doesn't just tell things. He's an intricate structure guy, so if it...
Sure.
Eventually it'll go somewhere, whether or not that's good or not, we'll find
but
out.
But he... I mean, I have no doubt that he knows exactly where it's going to go, you know?
Oh, yeah. He has a chart, and it's in circles.
Literally, same sentence was about to come out of my mouth.
We're going to take a quick break in a second, but I'm really interested to know which of the next three books we're talking about, or four books, is your pick of the week. So I'm very excited. It's a very exciting thing. But in the meantime, let's have a quick word from our sponsor.
The year was 1916. Roderick Burgess conceived a plan. He would capture death.
Capture? You are death.
It's him. He's back.
The Sandman's a fairy story.
He's back, John.
Dream of the endless.
Greetings to you, Lucifer Morningstar.
Hello, Dream.
I have shown him fear in a handful of dust.
The Sandman. Only from Audible. In association with DC. Just close your eyes and listen.
Listen to the new Audible original, The Sandman, based on the best-selling DC graphic novels written by Neil Gaiman, adapted and directed by Dirk Maggs. Hailed by the Los Angeles Times Magazine as the greatest epic in the history of comic books, this audio adaptation is decades in the making. Starring James McAvoy in the title role, follow Morpheus the Dream Lord as he's pulled from the Dream Realm and imprisoned on Earth. When he finally escapes, he must restore his power to rebuild his domain. And that's just the start. Featuring a powerhouse ensemble cast including Riz Ahmed, Kat Dennings, Michael Sheen, and more. In your wildest dreams, you've never heard anything like this. Listen now, only on audible.com/Sandman.
You think in all the audio stuff that's going to be coming out, like in 6 months,
no
that everybody
TV.
Had to record at home will just sound terrible?
Not Neil Gaiman. He never sounds terrible.
No, he could talk into like a iPhone 1 mic. You'd be like, oh, I feel good. That's soothing.
It feels
nice.
Very relaxed. So we had a second issue of That Texas Blood come out. And I liked it more than the first.
Yeah, one. I did too. It took me a little bit to be like, what the hell are these people? What's going on here? But, if I had any quibble with it,
mm-hmm.
I think it's very good. I said that before. And I still mm-hmm. do. There's bits of it where... Like they're doing it's in the dialogue. There's very naturalistic
yep.
dialogue. They take a lot of uhs and pauses. And I have done this when I have tried to write things before. And I'm just noticing it a little much. Like I get it, and it works with speech, but in comic book form, it tends to stand out a little bit. And sometimes you have to sacrifice that realisticness.
This is Bendis is doing.
Yes, it is. No, it's Bendis is doing when I did it.
Chris
Condon. I'm not successful.
He's the writer,
he's better than me.
And he talked in his first issue about how he's from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I want to say first, the Jacob Phillips art I thought was better than the first issue.
Yeah.
So in this issue, it's not exactly a continuation, although it kind of is. It's a continuation of the first issue in which, mm-hmm. at the end of the first issue, there was a guy who was murdered. In this issue, his brother flies back to the small town where he's from, leaving his girlfriend behind. And he's a pariah in town because of him and his brother. So he tries to get some food at the diner and they won't serve him and... He ends up meeting up with the sheriff in the first issue, and they go back to the station to talk about his brother's murder. Very sort of simple story, but I thought the art was good. The dialogue reads a little heavy-handed.
I mean, it reads like you would want an actor to perform it.
Right.
You know, like note by note, like Aaron Sorkin, Mehmet-ish. You know, like you have to do everything the way I have put it rhythmically in the meter, and it's good. Don't get me... Like, when I read it... It sounds like people are talking, but I don't know if that's necessarily great for something that you're
reading. Yeah.
Does that make
sense? No, for sure.
I really like this story. I'm 100% in. I want to know desperately what's going on in this town, and they stopped the issue before I got to know. And, you know, the scene in the diner was sort of unexpected and really interesting, you know, and the scene in the hotel before that led into it. I love the sheriff character a whole lot. I want to walk around with him all day and watch him build model airplanes in the middle of the night. I want all of that.
Yeah.
It's really good. And so I'm glad this is a thing, and I'm glad I know. Like, it was the last week. Oh, wait, this. Oh, get that. Yeah, that's really good. Yes, good.
Was this your pick of the week?
No.
Interesting. Batman, Superman, number 10, Josh Williamson, Clayton Henry.
Are you reading this?
Yes.
I was like, is Ryan Ottley drawing this?
It does look a lot like Ottley, you're right.
Once I realized that the Man Who Laughs stuff was over, I was like, oh, we're just going to get a Batman, Superman issue.
Right.
And I'm down with it. Whatever else is going on right now, I'm just watching Batman and Superman. I think Josh Williamson has a real, you know, Silver Age underlying thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the art on this. It looks so different than everything else I was reading other than Ryan Ottley.
Well, Clayton Henry is really good. He's always been really good.
I don't know him from anything, or at least I don't remember.
He gives Superman a 16 head, but other than that.
It's okay. That seems to be just the style.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really dug this. I had fun with it. And, you know, Ultra Humanite.
I mean, there were zombies.
Sure.
Did I note the zombies? Yes. Did I? I was like, well, okay.
Eh.
We are noted DC zombie lovers.
Really? It's more like just reanimated flesh for a technical purpose, which isn't exactly. I mean, they're zombies, but it's a different kind. I like the Ultra Humanite an awful lot. It just seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's just Silver Age goodness. Yeah. I had fun with it. It just wasn't what I was expecting in a good way.
Was this your pick of the week?
No.
Oh, okay. Batman, The Adventures Continue, number 9. This is the digital first book we haven't talked about in a while, written by Alan Burnett and Paul Dini with art by Ty Templeton. This is the issue that I've been waiting for, I assume others as well, as Jason Todd has been dogging Batman and the family this whole time in the background, and now finally events start to come together. And it should be noted, Jason Todd was never in the continuity of the cartoons. So they're having to sort of shoehorn him into the time between Dick Grayson and Tim Drake, which was between versions of the show. And you can make it work in your head if you want to. I don't necessarily want to, but you can. And what's notable about it is it's not pre-crisis origin Jason. It's not post-crisis origin Jason. It's a whole new Jason Todd origin in which his brother was a member of a gang. He was the newest member. They made him the newest member wear a red hood. And he was the lookout. He ended up dying on a job. Jason goes and beats up the gang. Batman comes across that, sees this kid's spunk, mm-hmm. and decides to bring him in to the fold and join the team. And so we get a little bit of that here. It's just notable that if you're a Batman, the animated series fan, this is how they're shoehorning in the Jason Todd with light brown hair. So somehow at some point his hair gets darker.
Jason Todd with the light brown hair.
It was fine. I've been waiting for this issue. The other issues have been okay up to this point, but I'm just waiting to see how they're trying to make this work.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were still reading any of this. So.
It's something where I always forget because it doesn't come out till Thursday. Mm-hmm. If I happen to look at the app, I go, oh, right, that's out.
Yeah. I think I didn't read it yesterday because it came out today. I'm just flipping through it now. So that would be hard to keep on the show for that reason. But they're fun. They're short. You know.
Yeah, they're bite-sized. It's not bad. It's half an issue length. Those are the books we wanted to talk about, but if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote and add a book to the rundown. And this week it was a blowout as Hedra, the one-shot, just called Hedra, by Jesse Lonergan, is out from Image Comics. It's technically an Image number 1, although it's not number 1, but technically is. This was very interesting, and I liked it very much.
5 stars.
I see, this is another, I liked it, but, .. Like, I was really into about 3/4 of the way through, and then I sort of lost. I got a little muddled in the storytelling because it's entirely silent. It reminded me a lot of Prophet in that way that they would occasionally tell stories that way with the infographics and things. But at a certain point, I sort of lost the thread of what was happening. But I really liked it. I thought the art was incredible. I thought the storytelling was really strong. I liked the imagination of it. I liked it a lot.
I had no idea what it was going to be. I saw it was 56 pages. And like when I got started, I was like, all right, this is an intro. And then after a little bit, I thought, oh, it's just going to be like this.
Right.
And then I kind of got into it because they kind of got into it. Like, it was just, there's something very specifically that this reminded me of. It's almost like a little bit of Jimmy Corrigan in here. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. You know, and you're watching as they get into space and the orbital dynamics and then the sort of playing with the panels and moving around. It felt very... fresh or it felt just very in contrast to all of the other things that I've been reading. But at the same time, it was a kind of thing I like. You know, it's space travel, it's, you know, we got to save the Earth and you know, but it's a little, the ship is cartoony. The Starman sort of spaceship.
Old-fashioned.
Yeah, you know, space bubble helmet. You know, but like a very distinctive visual style going on. Very graphic, very geometric, all at the same time, but not sort of hanging on one thing or another. But every page has some thought to it. Every page has a specific kind of motion that is communicated by the design and by the shapes. So you kind of, when you turn the page, you kind of know what it's going to be about instantly, you know, and then you can follow it in intricacy, or you can back up and sort of say, see the one movement. And I know what you're saying with the part where she goes to the other planet and they transform her. And then I also like realized at one point, like her, the little shape above her that shows up.
Yep.
I think that, I don't remember the Latin or the for it, but that's the Hedra shape, I think. Whatever, that's where that word comes from. I'm not sure exactly how it, a hedron maybe, you know. And then she goes and she's, you know, it's Wally. She goes and saves the Earth, sort of, you know, and it's just silly. And it, I don't know. I'm assuming this person isn't European, but it's definitely got a European feel to it. And because it was so simple, and I want to keep saying it was different, but like, I've read comics like this before, but they're not often very, you know what the book I'm thinking of is? And what? I don't, oh God, it was from Oni Press.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the guy's face, but I can't remember his name. And it was all about a birth. And I don't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. And it was done in like 16 panel grids, the whole thing. I actually literally just pulled the comp off my shelf last week and then threw it away. But it's gone now because I took the trash out. So that's not good. One Life, One... Oh, the guy wrote DC Comics for a little while. Anyway, I'll think of it or I'll put it... We'll get to it later. Maybe somebody can tell me. But it sort of reminded me of that. That didn't have any dialogue and it was a lot of little tiny panels. You know, I like the color palette. You know, and
it was a beautiful book.
It was a gorgeous book. And it just showed thoughtfulness and it showed style and it wasn't entirely clear, but I got the point, you know. I get what they're getting at, and it was fun to read and it was mysterious and it was almost like watching an old silent movie.
Yeah, it was definitely an injection of creativity and unusualness into the week. I was following it very well up until the point where she gets sort of turned into a half robot or whatever the hell that happened to her. It's a silent book and it's Earth has blown itself up with bombs and there's an astronaut who looks like every girl that every indie comic person is in love with goes into space to save the Earth, and she stumbles upon this guy in a suit who's flying around in space outside of her ship, and then there's sort of a Gulliver's Travels middle section where they land on a planet and turns out the people are tiny. And then at some point, he takes her back to his planet, and that's when it got a little wonky for me. But I didn't...
Yeah.
And that's 40 pages into 56. So it's almost the very end of it. It lost me a little bit. Not a ton, but a little bit.
I think the idea was she meets this other, you know, sort of like group of people, and they have some technology, and they pass it on, and that's how the Earth gets saved. Now, is the Earth changed? Is it different? Are there people? You know, like, that's all sort of the cost of the thing, but it's sort of like the next step. You know, or that's, you know, you can make it however you want.
Mm-hmm. It was very good, though.
Yeah, it was really good, and I just loved that. You know, whenever I see it's a new Image number one, and somebody's gonna, I wait for some slightly.
Well, it's not a number one; it's just a one shot.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I didn't know that. You know, I just saw it was a new thing, and it was oversized, and I thought, okay, it's going to be some old trope that they've gone ahead and dropped a monkey into or whatever. And it just, I had no idea what was coming. And I thought, that's really exciting when you find a thing that you just had no clue about and you just get into it and you're like, oh, I like this. For us in comics, that doesn't happen enough.
I think you should start a publishing company in which you take old tropes and drop monkeys into it.
I'd make a fucking fortune.
I think you should do that.
Yeah.
Monkey Westerns.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to read a Monkey Western?
You got to tell me that exists. That must be a thing. I know I've read comics. Simon Spurrier did Six Gun Ape or Six for Boom.
Patron pick is Hedra by Jesse Lonergan. Let's do the ratings on this book. Ratings out of 5. I'm going to give it 4.25.
I gave it 5.
There you go. Hedra. Terrific.
Hedra.
Check it out. Check it out. Really check it out. It's really, at least leaf through it, see if it's your kind of thing. It's really good.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, like, I know there's not a next issue, but I'm going to watch for Jesse Lonergan's name going forward for sure.
True. That's patreon.com/iFanboy, where any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like Super Gavin and Super Gavin. He can emit any kind of light, any spectrum of light at any intensity or luminosity from his hands. This is probably a power we've given up before.
It sounds familiar.
He can omit any kind of light. He can make spotlights. He can make, like, fill lights if he's on camera, constantly on Zoom calls. He can do any kind of light. If he needs to, you know, UV light for something, he could use that.
It has to be from his hands, or yes. Can it come from any direction?
No, it's from his hands.
Okay.
They're lights.
You guys don't understand how good lights have gotten since we stopped doing the video show.
Yeah.
When we used to do the couch video show,
mm-hmm.
I'm not telling you, you know, we bought like a $1,300 lighting kit, like high, not high end, but like professional grade yeah. ENG kit. It had like, a fill, a key, a backlight. It had like an umbrella light for the diffuse light. Bought an extra couple of those. Yep. The soft boxes. And they got hot as fuck.
You don't have to tell me. I almost started a fire with the one we have left.
They're like the high-end halogen bulbs at the time. And then it's just as the case in our life, so many, we are late or we are early with everything. So, you know, like now everything is LED. It's much cheaper. It's much lighter. It does the same thing, but it doesn't make the room feel like hell itself. And so I have this like 30,000-pound case downstairs with all these pro-grade lights circa 2006, which are worthless.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get rid of them because we paid $1,300 for them.
I have the one extra softbox here, and I was using that for a while for our hangouts. And then one day I was setting it up, and I didn't realize the power switch was on, and I hadn't fully opened it. I plugged it in so that I'd be ready to go when I opened it, and it was on, so the heat from the bulb started catching the canvas on fire. It was a little fire before the hangout. Anyway, this is called Josh Doesn't Have Power and is procrastinating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like, what are you going to do with them? You going to give them the Goodwill?
Sure.
Here you go, kids. Try not to burn the house down. Why are these so heavy? Like, you could not touch the metal part.
No, it's too hot.
It would kill you. And then, you know, like, we started doing this podcast really early, which was good. And then we went and we did our show before there were YouTubers. We had stopped, and then people were like, hey, you know what might be a good idea if we watch regular long-form shows on the internet? And we're, come on! or there's college, where we the literal last class of video people to ever use
3/4-inch tapes.
Jesus Christ. Sorry. Sorry, I apologize. So, next up, David Botazzi,
mm-hmm.
or if you want to put the T in there, the Botazzi, depending on how you want to go. And I did a hand gesture when I said that.
Of course.
Botazzi. He can adjust any film or television program that you are watching by the date.
What does that mean?
So if your movie is set in 1955, he can move it forward or backwards, and it will become a different kind of period piece.
But it's the same actors, same story, same script.
Same characters, same actors, but everything is adjusted for the time in which it was in. Clothing, sets, all that stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can go anywhere. So you can watch Gangs of New York 2008.
So the script would have to change because the story wouldn't be the same for Gangs of
New York. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, like, the story is the same. So the script's not the same.
The essential story is the same, but the details would
yes.
have to change.
Okay. Yeah, it's the fine details are adjusted for the time period in which the movie takes place.
I see.
And you can do that with any film or television show.
What were you just watching?
Don't know. It started off when you said add monkeys to things, and I was like, that's too simple.
You should just have mad monkeys.
I was my first, and then as we talked for a while, it changed into that.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how it works. And that's how you get
like,
your superpower.
Like, take Full Metal Jacket and move it into, like, 1776.
Okay.
That's a great movie.
It could be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's not permanent. You're like, that doesn't change. It just means the one you're watching. You want to go see movies over at David's house.
They're trippy.
Yeah. Also, killer sound system, David. Way to go. If you like what just happened, if you want to be part of it, the reason that happened for those folks was because they came to patreon.com/ifanboy and they donated at over $5 a month at that level, and they got on the list, which is not nearly as long as it used to be. So if you're thinking, oh, I want mine, but I don't want to wait that long, it's probably a pretty good time to get on there. We also have a new stretch goal. If we hit the next stretch goal, we will be introducing the G.I. Joe Corner show into our suite of podcast, which my wife is like, you're fucking doing a show all the time. I was like, I know, and I want them to donate more, but I also don't. What is that going to be? How often will it come out? hopefully we'll never have to know. But also, you know, it'd be cool if we did. We did the G.I. Joe corners during the early quarantine shows to fill time. And some
it'll
like
come out
and
once a
didn't.
Fortnight.
That might be too off.
I don't know what a fortnight is.
It's really?
Is it 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, I do know.
It seems like the kind of thing you'd know.
I did know. I just forgot.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah. So go over to patreon.com/ifanboy if you would like, if you're able to and want to support the show, that's where to do it. There are many different ways you can do that there. And many other places. You can go to the shirt and sundries store over at ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 8 designs currently available. I am seeing a lot of folks post pictures of those masks out there.
Yep.
And that's really cool. I like that. There's t-shirts, there's other things. Someone did get a bath mat at least once. I'm pretty sure I couldn't get away with it, but I thought about it.
It's my bath mat.
Yeah. You can also, if you don't want to deal with any of that rigmarole, get over to ifanboy.com/support. You'll find a direct link for PayPal. You know, you might still have a PayPal account. I use PayPal all the time. I love it. That's not an endorsement. It's just a thing because I don't have to get up and get my credit card. You could just drop something in the tip jar. You could say, you know what? I like you this much. And it's like, $8? Really? All right. I mean, we thank
that
you.
That sounds
for
right,
it.
Though.
Yeah, no, I think if, you know, like in the Avengers, you know, like, I love you 3,000, like, I love you 8.
Yeah.
And, yeah, actually, that does sound good. Finally, get over to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Links to buy books for Books Bloat are there to get to Amazon. There's a general link to go over there.
I think we should do a show that comes out based on the cycles of the moon, the lunar cycles.
Yeah. 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 A lycanthropic kind of thing.
Yeah, just, you know, only comes out when there's a full moon.
It's fine. Will we talk about astrology?
Maybe.
Okay.
Let's do a quick email. This is an email from Stu W., who's been waiting a long time to get his email answered. So we thought we'd do it.
I understand that he doesn't need to advertise.
Stu W. says, hello, new patron here. But I have
Thank
a question
you.
I've been thinking of since the original Two Jamokes era. It's sort of for the Josh Art Corner in that it deals with visuals or the absent thereof. Superheroes as a genre have long been the biggest chunk of the comics market, and now superheroes dominate cinema blockbusters, and there are so many superhero TV shows I've lost track. But superheroes in prose text never really took off. They don't show up on bestseller lists the same way they show up in other media. 10 years ago or so, there seemed to be an attempt in publishing led by Austin Grossman's very good Soon I Will Be Invincible. They relaunched George R.R. Martin's Wild Cards, and more examples that would make this email even longer, but none of them took to the top sales charts. They still publish some series, but none that are cultural phenomenons. As an aside, with Martin so hot and superheroes dominant, why hasn't there been a Wild Cards adaptation? Have you ever read superhero prose? Why do you think art and visuals is so important to the genre? I also don't think superheroes are a genre, but that's just me.
Yeah.
They're a character type.
Yeah. That could go... Yeah,
that's just me. It's fine. I'm not going to die
on
the hill.
I think it could go either way, but I think, however you phrase it, the question has merit. It might be habit. For me personally, I actually am not into so much of the other superhero stuff because I get so much of it in comics, and I get so much of it in comics because that's where all the big talent ends up working on superheroes. And so when I go to watch a different thing, I kind of don't want more superheroes. Now, I don't believe I'm typical of a lot of comic book / superhero readers.
Oh, God, no.
No, exactly.
You are atypical.
Yeah, no, I recognize that. But, you know, why does it need to have visuals that go along with it? I don't know.
I think it does. I think that's part of the answer is superheroes are a spectacle. And I've read many superhero novels and liked them. But I think for most people, there's a certain spectacle of what you're seeing. And you need to see it in some way, either on the page or on the screen. And it's just hard. You know, novels do a lot of things well and a lot of things better than anything other medium, but visual spectacle, they can't do it all. And it's all about your imagination. And, you know, maybe for some people, and it doesn't, you know, that doesn't necessarily make sense. Like fantasy is big in fiction, but and it's also spectacle, but I don't know. I just talked myself out of that whole argument.
I mean, a good story is a good story is a good story.
Soon I Will Be Invincible was terrific. And that was more than 10 years ago. That
well,
was like 15 years ago.
Didn't Cavalier and Clay win a,
yeah, but that wasn't about superheroes. That was about the creation of superheroes.
I know, but you know,
it was about artists. I mean,
fair enough. You know, can I tell you a deep dark secret?
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been 10 years ago now, maybe a little less. A young Tom King, who I knew before, of you readers probably knew who he was. We'd met him, and he wrote this book, Once Crowded Sky.
Yep.
And I said, "Hey, Tom, get your publisher to send me a copy of that." And he said, "Sure thing." And it is still sitting over there, and I have not read it.
I read it. It took me two tries to get into it. The first time I read like the first 50 pages, and I was like, ah. And I did put it down. I came back to it, eventually read it, enjoyed it. And I've read a bunch of. I read Once Cracked Sky. I read I'll Be Invincible. There's been tons of like. Well, there was a book called It's Superman, which was actually really great. It put Superman in like historical time in which he was created. So it was like 1930s Superman. I've read the Kingdom Come prose adaptation, the Crisis on Infinite Earths adaptation, the Batman No Man's Land adaptation.
You've read a lot more than I have.
This isn't superheroes, but we read the Greg Rucka Queen of Country books. That's not superheroes, but it's comics. Death Superman adaptation. Like, there's been a bunch of. For a while, DC was like turning all their big events into novels, and I read them all. Mm-hmm. But I have the context in my head for what's going on. So that's, I don't know. I don't know why.
I mean, I can't say, like, I don't know if it's just me, but like when I read a novel, I tend to read certain kinds of things. I read a lot of nonfiction mm-hmm. in my novels. I read history stuff. I read different kinds of things than I could get in comics, basically. So I wouldn't think to go for it a heck of a lot. I'm looking now. It's sort of just like a list of superhero novels, and I haven't read any of them, really.
Right.
I cannot imagine being like, oh, look, a Daredevil prose novel. I got to get into that. I wouldn't do it.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. And I think it's got to come down to the public's need for the spectacle. Like mm-hmm. things like sci-fi and fantasy have a long tradition in prose form. And so there's a cultural acceptance to that. And in fact, the tradition is so long they existed before they were able to adequately transfer those ideas onto screens, you know, in the 50s mm-hmm. and 60s. You know, I just feel like the public's, I don't want to say discovery of superheroes, but kind of.
Well, the sort of widespread
comes along at a time in which they can go to the movies and see it in
yes
full CinemaScope Technicolor, and you don't really, you just can't get that in novels.
And since you can't get a lot of those people to go read the comics,
right?
Then taking them not even one step further, but a couple steps further, and being like, read the prose of this. But like to be fair, like in my mind, because I just saw there was a Daredevil novel, and I just thought, if I was going to read Daredevil, I just want to read comics, because such a large part of that is Frank Miller, John Romita Jr. If I'm going to read superheroes, I'm going to read it in the format it was best, you know, that was not quite designed for it, but the thing that really.
It is interesting.
It is. It's really interesting.
They dominate everything else.
But there's no reason why you can't tell a story like that in novel form and have it be absolutely great and compelling. I mean,
and you have. I'm telling you, Superman Will Be Invincible was a great book, and I really did enjoy Once Cracked Sky, and mm-hmm. some of those other adaptations allowed you to do things that you can do in novels, like go into the inner life of the character that you can't really do in comics as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You can do it in comics, but it's super boring in comic form.
I remember the Crisis novel. And the Kingdom Come novel, I remember, you got to spend a lot more time into the thoughts and the feelings of the characters that you didn't get to do in the book. So that, it allows you to do different things. And you can absolutely tell great stories, because as Josh just said, a good story is a good story. The question is, why doesn't it take off? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, but
why don't the comics take off?
Yeah. I mean, chances are a lot of those novels, just as many people read them as read most comics, but they considered absolute failure in publishing. We only sold 5,000 copies. Over at Simon & Schuster, they're like, oh, it's a disaster. Over at Image, they're like, my God, we can pay the rent.
I'm actually pretty sure 5,000 gets you on the bestseller list.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
contact@ifanboy.com. Stu wrote in, and that's a good question, and we don't have an answer, but it was fun to noodle around in our heads about it.
Sure.
So thanks for writing in.
Hey, if you're listening to this, then that means on the week it comes out, then that means that last week I released an episode of iFanboys Talk Explode, speaking with artist cartoonist Steve Lieber, who I will describe as an old pro. And I don't mean old as in terms of age, but just he's a guy who came up with a different group of artists than, you know, he was taught. It was really interesting. He was taught by guys at the Kubert School from like the 50s.
Right.
You know, he learned from Kubert, he learned from that guy's contemporaries, and he's still bringing a lot of that stuff into the work that he's doing. And I think that for a little while in comics, this is a preview, but he was a man out of time. And more recently, like, he found a way to fit in. And I'm going to tell you right now, I said, do you ever, you know, like, you're known for doing funny comics now. He's like, I never thought I was very funny. I was never trying to do funny comics until all of a sudden I started doing it. And I was like, that is fascinating.
Was he funny on the show?
He's kind of funny.
Because I remember we interviewed him at the video show, and it was like, you know, not a bad interview, but it wasn't like interviewing Jeff.
Parker.
Jeff Parker.
Yeah. Well, him and Parker are buddies.
No, but I'm saying it's like he's just a different personality type. That's all.
Yes, he does. No, he's his own person. I like him a lot. He's, you know, I always say this when I talk to comics people, the ones that I like best are just the ones who just love comics. Like, what would you do? I make comics. That's all that's what they're made for. Steve Lieber is made for making comics. And he talked to me for quite a while, and I really enjoyed the talk. And I think that if you're listening, you will too. It's some good sort of shop talk stuff and things like that.
So August means it's Booksplode time, and Josh and I will be reviewing Pluto Volume 1 some point in August. Hopefully soon. I'm not going to commit to the date now, but hopefully soon. And then after that, of course, will be a Talksplode. And both the Booksplode and the Talksplode show were unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboys. Thank you very much. Head over to ifanboy.com. That's where you can find all the podcasts. This show, the Booksplode, the Talksplode, the Mediasplode, special edition shows when they return. They're all at ifanboy.com. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy or following at ifanboy on Twitter or at ifanboycomics on Instagram, where you can also find the Best of the Week in Panels feature. And individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. Also, he's still on Twitter, but not really. And you also can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. Like and subscribe, people. You can keep up to date on the old video show re-uploads, which is happening. It's going to happen over the course of a couple of years because there's a lot of old video shows. We're doing three a week. Every Monday is a new mini episode. This past week was the Pick of the Week Spotlight on Action Comics 863. That's Jeff Johns and Gary Frank. And then we had our two-part trip to San Diego Comic-Con 2007. So if you want to see what the comic world looked like 13 years ago and what we looked like 13 years ago, check those out over youtube.com/ifanboy.
Can I tell you about the full body terror I just experienced when you said a new mini every Monday? I went, what? I had a full out-of-body thing there.
Did you not read the email?
It was like forgetting I hadn't done my homework for 13 years.
You're up first.
I have nightmares about that, by the way, of like waking up and realizing it's the end of the semester and I didn't do any homework.
I have these nightmares that are so real that I think I shouldn't have graduated college because I stopped going to a class and never got the credit. It's this recurring nightmare where I stopped going to like a math class in college.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is stupid. And then I'm like, oh, I never finished that class. I never passed that class. I never got the credit for that class. I shouldn't have graduated. It happens regularly.
That's interesting because my version of it is that it's the end and I think I'm done, like the end of a semester or the year. And then I remember that I forgot to go to a class. And it wasn't that I said this is stupid. I just forgot it was there one day. And Connor, you know this is my personality,
yeah,
is that I'm going to forget something very important. And I'm also like, in addition to my ability to forget that things are supposed to happen, I am like a responsibility sponge. Like I'm right. Like, I will take it all on. I had the dream all the time. It is terrible.
But even though I know it's a dream, I still wake up and I spend some time going, what class was that? Did I stop going to a class in college? Like, I've got to mentally get out of it because it's so vivid that I'm not quite sure I didn't stop going to a class in college.
Yeah, I didn't. Now that I did, I
might have.
I'm the guy who read every book they assigned all through. That was, I never, anyway. If you like this show and what it has become, you could write us a review. You could leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts. You could go to the Guitar Center where Connor is recording and tell them that you really like the job they're doing there.
Yeah.
Better yet, tell your friends about it. I want to acknowledge what everyone's thinking.
That's
it's
fine.
Not Connor's fault. You can't do anything
it's
about
not me.
It. And there we are. So thanks you, buddy, pal. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for all the support that we get. Thanks for making us feel like we're good at the thing and coming back every week. And thank you, Connor.
Thank you, Josh.
All right.
What's going on? Are we ending the show?
Yeah.
Like for good?
Yeah. No. I mean, Can we do that?
Listen, everybody, stay safe out there. Wash your hands, wear your masks, stay distant from each other.
Use your brains. You know what's up.
I need you all to comply because I need to get outside.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye. The time has come at last. Secret, secret, I've got a secret to throw. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.